Yeah. Five killers arise from graves. The within, they shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, they clear space and time and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Okay, ladies, I'm Ryan, and I co-host this show, Experience Grind. Some of you probably heard that we're pricks. We are pricks. We've got one interest here, and that's the show. I don't care whether you live or die. I want to see you listen in and smile. I can't use you if you don't smile. I can't use you if you don't listen. So thanks for listening. Let me introduce my co-host. The best advice he ever got: if someone gets in your way, you step on them. If you're the only one left standing, they hire you. It's Kyle. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah. I was fully prepared to do this entire episode topless. to Elizabeth Berkeley, and I chickened out of it. Yeah.
You still can.
Nah, I'm not doing it. I was going to put googly guys on my boobs. Like,
oh, they my have God, the little, you should
have. I don't have jewels. I got so flipped out. That's why I was like, I can't do it. I failed. I bailed. That's my story.
All right. Well, I feel like that's something we're going to revisit in the future. I'm not going to let that idea die. Looking fresh as always, it's Brian with a really striking Boston Versace hat.
You gotta wear the Versace. You have to. I'm just glad that now I understand what Taylor Swift's talking about in her new album.
Oh man, that's a deep cut. I don't get that one. What's the
name of the album? Cut. The name of the album is Life of a Showgirl. And now it all makes sense.
Oh, okay. Was it also NC-17 rated?
Oh, very much so.
Very spicy, some spicy Swift. All right. And last, not least, here's a quote for you. I'm not trying to be sexy. It's just my way of expressing myself when I move around. That's what Elvis said. Sometimes, that's also what Sean says. Sean, how you doing, buddy?
That's true. Guys, we've heard Ryan do a lot of impersonations over the last couple of weeks. Did anyone notice how great of a caller from Texas impression Ryan had at the beginning of the episode? That was like spot on. It kind of sounded like Brian, but I think he nailed it.
All right.
Pretty good.
Brian, how do you feel about being compared to Caller from Texas?
Well, I mean, I remember your impression of me sounded a lot like Caller from Texas. So, I you know, if enough people call you a rabbit, that's not the saying at all.
Was I doing an accent?
It is now. Nothing started as a saying until somebody said it.
That's so true. Brian, until enough people say it, it's not a saying. Yeah. But now it's going to be, if enough people call you a rabbit.
Listeners.
You might want to start eating some carrots.
You've got to make this take off. Do it. Say it once and get looked at really funnily and just never do it again.
And then just let other people catch on.
Yeah.
Well, those were all a bunch of references and quotes pulled from Showgirls, the movie we're talking about this week. And this was a doozy of a last minute pick that I made in the Patreon episode last week. It's a movie. It's a very controversial movie. One of the, I think, only wide-released NC-17 movies. There have been other NC-17 movies, but this one was, I think, one of the only ones to get a wide distribution to, like, all theaters around. And it had a huge budget. It had a gigantic budget. Paul Verhoeven was behind it. It is a big, big thing in Hollywood. This is, like, I think referred to often in the same ways that Waterworld is referred to, and like this big, excessive kind of almost passion project that maybe didn't quite like find the mark, especially during that time. Yeah. And we'll talk about if it maybe finds the mark now. Like some people say Waterworld kind of has a lot more meaning and significance now. But before we get into Showgirls, I real quick want to ask you guys, have you seen this movie before? Are you familiar with it?
I think no. I'm the only one who has seen this.
Yeah, this I had no idea.
Seen it, right, Ryan?
No. Yeah. I knew of it, but
yeah, just, this was
I knew it, it existed, not, boys, but
staple movie of young Kyle's adolescence.
Somehow not surprised. Not surprised.
I've only seen the first hour and ish minutes multiple times as a child.
Is yeah, that, I mean, right.
It can only last for so long at that age.
It took a while. Like, I, one thing, this, all right, so let me explain. At for a while, especially to like dudes my age now, this movie was like a mythic thing. Like, it was a big budget Hollywood movie on the rack, plastered in boobs. And come to find out, when you did finally get your hands on a copy, there's full frontal, man. There's mm-hmm. everything. So
mm-hmm. talked about in the same way that Wild Things was talked about.
This was way more. It was crazy. Every dude, every young boy that I knew in school, everybody was trying to watch this movie. At certain points, and it was almost like a cool thing. Like somebody would come in, like. Oh, I watched Showgirls over the weekend, dude. You'd be like, what? No! How? What? Ah. It's crazy. It was a wild thing, man. This was pre-internet. Kids are so goddamn spoiled now. It's crazy.
It's true.
But yeah, so I have seen this, but it had been a long, long time. Probably easily 20 plus.
Okay.
Okay. I knew nothing about this movie other than the poster. Which actually, I found a funny Letterboxd review about this. It just said, my fiance was expecting a movie about a stripper with one whole leg as a body. The poster misled him, and he was severely disappointed.
David Lynch, I've got a movie idea for you.
No, he's dead.
Inspiration for David the Lynch leg AI bot? Christmas Story.
Well, dang.
Yeah, while not completely unfamiliar with this movie, because I knew that it had Elizabeth Berkley in it, I still, for the entire last week, thought that I was supposed to be watching Striptease.
I did the same thing. Like, for a good portion of the week, I was like, oh, yeah, I gotta watch Striptease.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just the two literally just combined those conflated movies. In my brain, yeah.
Yeah.
One was actually successful.
Was it
which
Striptease?
One? I think Striptease did numbers.
I think Striptease did all
right. Oh, because Demi Moore, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also
not goes. Being NC-17 probably helps.
Also, yeah. People yeah. being able to go see your movie.
Instead of just having...
Without the director encouraging people to sneak in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how well the other movies that were out when Showgirls was out, how well they did.
That's a great question,
people buying
actually.
Tickets for other movies and then going into Showgirls. Mm. Because we've all done it.
Man.
Not for Showgirls specifically, but we've all bought like tickets for PG-13 movies or something and then snuck into that R-rated movie when you were a teen.
I didn't.
Well, no?
You know.
Okay.
No.
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 Fair enough.
I just got to go watch them.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
I also didn't go to the movies a lot when I was a teenager,
way different households,
I guess. So.
Remember.
I see. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, enough of this banter. Let's just hop in. Before I do the story, I do want to ask Sean, because Sean, unfortunately, did not get a chance to see the movie, kind of what he thinks about it going in, because I got a maybe not so positive vibe from him about the movie. And then by the end, after we've talked about it, going to see where he stands and if that's shifted at all.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed that I wasn't able to. Well, I'm not bummed that I didn't get to watch this, but I'm a little bummed that I didn't get to watch it to talk about it. Yeah, stuff came up, but I wasn't looking forward to watching it. This is not a kind of movie that I would particularly enjoy watching. And
female character is a lead protagonist. I get it.
What? What was that caller from Texas?
erotic drama, not Sean's passion genre.
Yeah, that is a very nice way of putting that.
Hey, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's also pretty nice to be calling this an erotic drama. But we'll get there.
I look forward to, I guess, hearing it from you guys. It's like, it's almost like hearing it through a filter, you know? It's just been distilled and let's go.
Get that we'll be pure your essence.
That's it.
I'm we'll the audience right now.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, let's just get into it then. So the story of Showgirls, it follows Nomi Malone, played by Elizabeth Berkley, a mysterious drifter with big dreams and an even bigger attitude, who dances her way from strip clubs to Las Vegas stages in style and passion. Along the way, she finds out that the road to stardom in Las Vegas can get pretty nasty. That's pretty much it. That's the story, really. There's some other things that happen if we want to get into specifics. It's what it is. I'm like ready to get into this story. I just smacked that fly. I want to hear from Kyle. What are your thoughts on the story of Showgirls?
Showgirls is your basic rags to riches to rags. Movie of self-discovery. A bit. It's the girl that's chasing the dream. On the whole, it sounds pretty basic. What's crazy is one of the things that we talk about, we don't do a lot, or we try not to. It's hard not to. Watching this movie from current year is a wild thing. Because I feel like after like all the Harvey Weinstein shit, like a lot of this hits way differently. It's really fucking... story-wise, it's good, to be completely honest. It's fucking excessive in so many parts, but, like, I mean, it's a goddamn seedy look. I can't believe this got made, to be honest with you. Like, as its critique of the entertainment industry as a whole, it's really insane that this got funded to this level. When it's literally Paul Verhoeven is like, all of you people are rapist, terrible fucking human beings. And you should all get kicked in the face in 3-inch stiletto heels. It's but overall also, basic.
Look at these buildings.
I don't want to give it a 5. Because again, I think I'm at a 4 right now, to be honest. So
we're back up to weird. 5 here after the last couple of weeks of 4, just so the audience knows.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at here currently. And I'll talk with other things too. Cause this is not a perfect movie. I don't know where it's at on the good or great spectrum. I guess we're going to figure it out as we go along, but I'm interested, but I'm at a 4. So, and let me kick it to newbie Bry Guy, and then I'll have Ryan take us home.
Yeah, it was interesting because this is one of those movies that I sat there and every few minutes I found myself asking out loud, why? Why is this happening? Why would you do this? What is the purpose of this entire character? Things like that. There were a lot of questions I had that, and a lot of them never really got answered. And I don't know if that's intentional or if it's just something that slipped through the cracks or I still have so many questions about this movie. And like Kyle, one of them is how did this get made? How did this get through the entire process of production without anybody being like, hey, They just let them do it. And it's like, NC-17, let's release it. The widest NC-17 release of all time. The highest production budget of an NC-17 movie of all time. The highest grossing NC-17 movie of all time. Which is a lot less than what the budget was, but we'll get there too. The story, if you look at it very simply, is, yeah, about Nomi and her rise to stardom as a showgirl and everything she has to sacrifice, everything she has to do to get there. But there are so many other side things happening at once that some of it seems unnecessary, but a lot of it is just the sensationalism, I think, the less to do with the story and more to do with just like the, we can, so why don't we? I think I'm going to go right down the middle and give it a 3. And kick it to Ryan. Oh,
Kyle. I do want to add real quick. The one, I'm not familiar enough with 90s Las Vegas culture to know how successfully and pop culturally relevant would a topless review show be? Like,
that's a good question. They
promote this thing like it runs the entire town.
Yeah.
But that's maybe a little bit of that. I don't know. We'll get into that. I think I have some opinions on that further down. Ryan, please. Sorry.
So for the story, I think I agree with both of you. Everything you've said, I kind of agree with. I think this is a pretty simple premise and a simple structure. What hasn't been said yet, which I do think is kind of interesting about it, is that it is really like an antithesis to a lot of like normal stories. Like there's the character arcs. Maybe they're not, there aren't character arcs in this movie. Maybe they're opposite character arcs. I don't think anyone really has an actual character arc or grows in any way. They just maybe learn a little bit more or become like more knowledgeable, but they are like the same characters through and through. And I say this and it sounds like a negative, but I think that's maybe the point of this all, because this is a satire, and Paul Verhoeven, if you don't know, does a lot of these, what did we say? Erotic thrillers, sexual erotic thrillers that Sean does not.
Erotic dramas.
Erotic dramas. Paul Verhoeven does a lot of erotic dramas, but he also does Starship Troopers and RoboCop. And a lot of people remember specific things, but forget like the very on the nose satire bits in those. RoboCop with its TV parody, and then Starship Troopers with its very clear like Nazi parallels and like the jingoistic like rah rah our country do your part kind of stuff. Like it's all very intentional. So I think a lot of that is very intentional here too. And why I'm not going to give it a 4 is because the dialogue and writing is part of it.
Oh God.
And I think the dialogue and writing is tricky at best. It's messy. Mm-hmm. It's not always great. I think the tone of the writing is all over the place. Some lines read very serious and earnest. Some read like very over the top, like we're going to eat the scenery. And it's not like because just one actor is doing one thing. Like one actor is doing many different things depending on the scene. It's a weird thing, and I think it's part of the script. I don't think the script fully knows what's going on. And from what little I've read from Paul Verhoeven afterwards, it seems like he didn't also love the script and thought it had many issues with this too. And he really latched on to, what's her name? Molly, her character. And Paul Verhoeven's like, this is the only character in this movie. This is my character. All of the rest of this is whatever. It's a vehicle. It's a service. And I think that's kind of telling to a lot of the writing. So I think it ultimately is positive. But I do think there are some issues. I think it's kind of more in that generic 3. It's a little more on the basic side. So I do fall with Brian, I think, on this one. All right. And I was waiting for Sean, but there is no Sean. We're just going to go into the next one.
Boo!
Oh, man, is there a ghost in here heckling us?
I'm scared.
No, it's not Brooke Stover.
That's over. It's dead. All right. Characters. And this will be covering the antagonist, protagonist, supporting cast, and just the casting in general. For this, I want to hear Brian start this one off.
Okay. These are all very despicable people. Every single one of them. Except for, with the exception of one character who has the absolute worst thing happen to her. So, like, there's all these terrible people. And then you have Molly, who is, like you mentioned, the character that the director kind of clung to and was trying to tell a story. And she's the only good person in this whole movie. And God, I hate what they did to her. And I almost forced myself into a headache. My brow was so furrowed at the end of this movie. And can we talk? Elizabeth Berkley was a choice. Elizabeth Berkley was definitely a choice. I feel like when you're like trying to cast a movie that has acting and dancing and nudity, you kind of get stuck with whoever will/can do all three. And sometimes they're not as good at one of them as they are the other two. Elizabeth Berkley is fantastic at nudity. She's a pretty good dancer. The acting, though, was questionable. And I think that happened with a lot of characters in this. I feel like the acting was all over the place. And then, you know, you read stuff afterwards where, you know, Paul Verhoeven is like, a lot of people get on Berkley about the acting style in this movie, but it was all me. He's like, I told her to do that stuff. I wanted her performance to be dramatic and over the top and campy. And I don't know if he's trying to, you know,
save her
from nice the choices she Hoban, made,
as he's known in Hollywood.
Like, famously, her career was ruined by this movie, and. Yeah. I think he felt guilty about that and tried to backtrack a little and say, no, like, oh no, I made her do these insane acting choices where in a flip of a switch, she goes from a happy person to somebody slamming ketchup bottles on the table. So they squirt in the air and throwing ice and storming off and just over exaggerating every facial expression. And there's scenes where people are like, oh, she's a good dancer. And I'm like, I'm not really seeing that either. Until it gets to the actual showgirl stuff, and I'm like, okay, the choreography here is better. She is a good dancer in the ensemble. When she's dancing alone, I'm like, this is rough. Also, she's not likable at all, and she's supposed to be like our main character, and I kind of can't stand her for most of the movie, or I'm just baffled by what's happening around her. Like, what? Why are we doing this stuff? I don't get it. And then there's James. James, the one who's going to teach her how to dance and has written the song for her. And like, he pops in and out of the movie whenever he wants and goes into the lap dance room, even though there's a bouncer who's not there.
And just lets him watch.
He's just like, yeah. Oh no, you got to pay if you want to. It's just, and Kyle MacLachlan and Gina Gershon, fantastic, usually. Here, I don't know what's going on. They gave Kyle MacLachlan the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 3 haircut. Obviously before he had it, but like, man, choices were made all around. I did. That's a long, long way of saying I'm giving this a 1 for character. And I'm hesitant to even give it that.
That breakdown at the beginning there was like the perfect breakdown of like her character, like touching upon like those different categories. I was like, okay, Brian's putting this on with a bow.
Trying to. Listen, you need a triple threat. And sometimes when nudity is one of those threats, your options become limited.
You know, a zero is an option. You could go zero.
It is. And I'm tempted to, but I think I'm going to give it a one just because I love Kyle MacLachlan so much. And I wanted to wait to talk about this, but they did eventually make this into a musical. And they changed the name of Zach Corey's character to Kyle MacLachlan. And that makes me so happy.
That's great.
At least that gets a one from me. And I would love to hear what Ryan thinks.
There are just so many places to dig into when it comes to the characters. And you've said a lot. And I would say a majority I agree with. So I don't really have much to refute. I think it's mostly adding on. I do think there is something interesting about Nomi's character. And I agree with, as Sean said, your perfect takedown of Elizabeth Berkley and the three things needed. And she can do maybe one, and it's the nudity. And that's not great. I kind of maybe like that explosive rage. I think that really adds, honestly, it feels earned. It feels kind of justified with like just the shit she goes through. And we talk about all of the characters, and I don't think there is a likable person here. I don't think Newbie's likable. I don't think anybody's likable except for Molly. And they do a really horrible thing to Molly.
I do have one other character that I think is redeemable here that is pretty excellent.
Henrietta. Oh,
I figured you were
going to say Mama.
Henrietta, Mama, is fantastic. Fantastic.
She's a lot of fun. Yeah, I agree. I think, all right, so, man, I've got so much to say about the characters. They do the bad thing to Molly, because I do think that is the film's way of saying, like, in this business, if you go down this path, like, if you are good and altruistic, you're going to get fucked over. Everybody's getting fucked over. Even Nomi, who is our main character, like, all these men around her, like, there's just a habit of, like, her being suckered into, like, a promise of, like, help and friendship or whatever, and then just immediately getting fucked over and betrayed. And I think that is a through line. I think the characters are pretty, honestly, consistently written. And I think in an intentional and smart way. And I kind of agree. This is where I'm defending the characters. But now here is where I will give back to Brian and say, like, he's right. I don't think they're necessarily done the best. Because Robert Davi and his strip club owner... And, yeah. Like, the little bit of vulnerability he shows while still being kind of, like, a shitty person is more than any of the other shitty people in this movie. And I think Absolutely. He does so much with, like, that little role. And, like, he kind of made me go, aw, even though he's a shitbag. And, like, he literally said something, like, awful in, like, the scene before. I can't remember what it was.
But yeah,
it was
it's like, pretty I'm much not hiring like, you back, even if you give me a blowjob.
That's it. And I was just like, fuck this guy. I miss you,
kid.
And yet his Proud deliverance and the way he handled it in like the next scene, I was like, oh, there's something there. Like he's a shitty person, but like he actually genuinely maybe cares about Nomi. And that's more than can be said about any of the other characters in this movie. Cause I don't think anybody cares about them, her specifically. They're just out to use her. It's a movie about people using people, and it's about the industry. It's just an industry of people using people, and it is intentionally grimy and nasty, and I think they do a mostly good job. I will also be a hardcore defender. Gina Gershon, I think, does great here. I really do like what she does. I don't know. She clicked for me. She worked. I don't know. That said, I also don't think it's great. This casting's fine. I think Kyle MacLachlan and Gina Gershon are the real highlights here, and everybody else is struggling in different ways. So I think I'm a little bit more positive, but I'm not super positive on this. So I'm going to give this a 2, and maybe a strong 2, but a 2 nonetheless. Kyle, close us out.
So... Glenn, plumber, who also he's James. He was the dance guy that makes the song for her. I was like, what is this fucking dude from? The whole time. And I was like, the third time when he showed up, I was like, Speed. He's Speed. He's the guy that drives the car in Speed. And I looked it up and I was right. So thankfully that it scratched. So character. All right. So Brian brought up Paul Verhoeven defending Elizabeth Berkley and wondering if that's him falling on the sword for her. And I'm going to say, I don't think it is. And the reason is because Paul Verhoeven can't fucking direct anybody in this movie. Because look at the cast, and they are, I don't know if it's intentional. Here, what I wrote, Verhoeven has like the brutality of Tarantino without the panache. Like, he'll shove your face in it, but it won't be like artistically. It's just because this is an exploitation movie, 100%.
Yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's good at. And so for that, like, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Character. I'm waffling between, it's weird how much I did like Nomi this time. Like, not like, but like completely understand, completely empathize with. I'm also, this is more into entertainment value. I have no idea what is good dancing or bad dancing. To me, everybody looks like complete shit the entire time in this movie. It looks so fucking dumb and awkward and awful. So that alone is weird to me. But I think these people are supposed to be this way. These are not redeeming people. You talked That's about true. Them having no character arc because they are in the filth. They are the scum. Yeah. They're not going to transition and get better. Kyle MacLachlan, or fuck, whatever the fuck, is just, he's a piece of shit. You see it when he plays Nomi to her face and then calls the guy. He's like, get back up here. I'm fucking with you, you idiot.
Yeah.
That guy, Greg Travis, who plays Phil, I thought he was fucking great. He nailed that smarmy, like, mid-level executive perfectly. But again, there's some that are just off. I thought Robert Davi was like, it was odd. His performance overall. I did like him there at the end too. Although again, it's weird when like he's touching her face, like he cares about her. It was weird.
All very weird.
A weird transition. But even Alan, Rockins, however the fuck you say that. That guy's great, but like him in this too is like none of them are used in their best ways. And I think that's we got to lay a lot of that on Verhoeven, but. Man, Elizabeth is just...
I think Alan Rachins, however you say it, I think he fucking sings. I think Verhoeven knows exactly how to use him. I think they know what they're doing.
And then I also love Patrick Bristow as just being typecast as a choreographer. Get it, homie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get it.
Thrust!
It's...
You make a good point that, like, these are despicable characters. The fact that I didn't like any of them is probably actually a good thing.
I think it's such a critique on the entertainment industry and how parasitic. And I think that lends more credence you mentioned earlier, and I wanted to comment on it. Like, them bringing up, like, plot threads or people that don't seem to go anywhere. And I think that is also just a part of the entertainment business. It moves so fast, and things just change like that. Nothing is permanent. Like, she was here yesterday. She's gone. This is the new girl. Here we go. Like, it's a grindhouse. It grinds these people up and chews them out. The guys are the teeth. The women are the food. That's just move through. Although, I think we are only seeing one side of this industry. You know, there's a Bryan Singer room for all those male dancers, too. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to buck the trend. Fuck it. I'm going three. It's middle. So
All right. I'm happy. It's a nice wide range of scores on that one.
A lot of discussion.
Yeah.
Let's keep it going then. We're going to hop into style. This covers tone, visuals, sound, and music. And for this one, yeah, let's hop off with Kyle.
5.
Oh, that's it. That's it. That's what you're saying. Not I mean, pick me. Five. You're saying 5.
Both. Pick me, and I think 5. I mean...
Okay. All right.
Style. Yeah.
No, I was just... All right. I want to hear why. Because you literally speak just got truth. Done saying he does what Tarantino does without none of the panache. And yet, in sure. style, he's going to get a 5 out of 5, which is essentially because the panache score.
I'm counting style as 2 in the presentation overall and what it wants to do of nailing the feeling of a Vegas show act. And I think in all aspects of that, it nails that. It nails just this excess lifestyle. The Vegas is like its own city that's like feeding on these people, the lights, the flashiness of it. I love every time it cuts to like backstage, how like it's all brightly lit, how it's like very industrial, which of course it is because it's a fucking stage performance. But like, I really enjoy those transitions. I don't know. It's crazy. I think it nails everything in that. And again, I think that leads to the exploitativeness of the movie and its presentation is that it's just there. It's jarring. It's bashing you over the head with the lights and the sound. And it's so quickly fucking paced and just everything is constantly at you. And it can feel overwhelming. I thought, I don't know, man. I liked it. It's got the style. And I think also, I don't know. We'll see where the rest of these go. But I'm saying 5. And let me go Brian.
Man, I don't know what to do with that. I don't know. Style, tone, genre, music. I'm having a hard time with this category because you're not wrong about what the things you said, but I don't know if a 5 is where I would sit with this. Because I think a lot of this looks kind of like shit.
I think it's supposed to. I think,
but at the same time, it has that Vegas-y, this is all for show kind of. Like, there is a potential for there to be intentionality behind that. And that actually kind of drives me a little bit crazy. Because now I don't know. I have no idea what was done intentionally and what was just like, yeah, this is a fucking weird movie, right? We're making, look at all these tits. And how much of it is like an actual commentary with intention. And I've seen enough of Verhoeven's work to know that like, there's obviously some intentionality here. There's a message he's trying to send. When I finished the movie, I was like, I don't know what it is. And then the more I thought about it, the more I sat with it, I was like, okay, yeah, obviously Hollywood bad. Hollywood bad. Vegas mm-hmm. bad. This life of glitz and glamour, not glitzy, not glamorous. And,
song and it bad.
Almost feels like the nudity and the NC-17-ness of it. And like the language that they're using, like they're trying to make these quotable moments. It feels like they're trying to pull a Fight Club and do like a commentary by tricking people into thinking it's one thing. And then pulling the rug out from them when they watch it. But I don't think enough people saw it for it to successfully do that. It never had one narrative going on long enough for them to be like, actually, it's this. So, like, could this be genius and a masterpiece? No, because it's execution is still part of it. And the style category is execution. So... Save whatever I said about being a genius for direction. As far as the execution goes, I think I'm going to have to give it like a 2. The music's not great. But again, it could be on purpose. And it gets you into this position of like, well, is it good that it's bad or is it just bad? So mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a very strong 2 and then have Ryan dissect this a little more.
All right. I love this, and I'm going to come in with a third take, in that I actually don't think it's bad. Kyle is saying it's bad, but good bad. Brian's saying it's bad, and I don't get it, and I think it's good, but it's mostly bad. I'm going to say, I think the way this movie shot's very good. I kind of liked it. I kind
of
liked it.
He uses tons of crane shots. So many crane shots, dude.
Yes, and long cuts. The editing in this movie is so fucking good. And like, I really liked the way this movie looked. I liked the way it was shot. I liked the editing. I liked the flow. I liked the texture of this movie. I liked a lot. I hate the sound. I think the sound's awful. The music's awful. I think the tone's so bad. All over the place. But I fucking really do like the cinematography a lot. And I can't lie. And Paul Verhoeven, this is a fun quote. He says he goes back to Showgirls the most often. He doesn't typically rewatch his movies, but he rewatches Showgirls very often. And it's because it's his best cinematography, he thinks. Not, you know, all of the tits and whatever, but it's the cinematography is the best. I think Verhoeven might be lying, but yeah. I really do like the cinematography here. And I do think of his movies, the cinematography, how it's actually shot, the look of it, I think it's pretty good. I think it's up there. I think it's really solid. I like it. Okay. But I'm not like over the moon with it, nor do I love it.
I feel like so many of the shots were so predictable. You have your wide stage shots. You have the shot going up the staircase in the back. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It felt very uninspired.
I don't disagree. That's why I'm a very reserved 3. I liked it enough to defend it. But I do not think it was 100% successful. I don't agree that Tarantino's the panache I would have gone with to like up it, but I do think there's definitely some more things he could have done to like really make this actually click and sing a little bit better in many of these ways. In terms of music, he could have had so many different music choices. There are many ways we could have improved this. It's 3. I liked it, but there's room for improvement.
I think that's fair. That's a good take.
All right. Penultimate category, entertainment value. This is going to cover the enjoyability, the success, and the reception. And for these, I always like to kick it to Bri Guy, who's got all of that good data ready to go.
Oh, yeah. $45 million NC-17 movie. Highest budget ever on NC-17. This was distributed to almost 1,400 theaters. So that's a wide release, the widest release of an NC-17 movie. Paul Verhoeven was trying to convince people under 17 to use a fake ID to see this movie. And the MPAA had to say, hey, no, you can't say that. MGM actually sent out extra employees to like check people's tickets at the show because like they didn't want people sneaking in. It happened though. This movie ended up only making $20.3 million, which is half, 45% of its original budget, which is a big flop. However, $100 million in video rentals.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as this movie was not in the theaters and you didn't have to, like, maybe, you know, watch it in public, people were like, let me see that. It did not get, I think they recut it. Like there's an R-rated cut that got distributed to Blockbuster and like aired on HBO and stuff. But like your independent movie rental places would have the original NC-17 cut. And this movie made $100 million in rentals and became one of MGM's 20 all-time bestsellers in the actual sales afterwards. So I mean, eventually it made its money. It couldn't do it in theaters. Rotten Tomatoes, 24% critical. That's not great. 38% audience, also not great. 25% on Metacritic. But IMDb has it at a 5.2, and Letterboxd has it as a 3.4.
This is... Wow.
Which is so much higher than the other ones.
It has seen a resurgence, I discovered.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In many communities, apparently the gay community has really embraced this movie quite a bit.
Big time. Big time. Uh-huh. And they did almost immediately and have really propelled this thing to...
Oh, wow.
To
okay, so it wasn't like a cult thing that happened years later. Just immediately.
I mean, it was and it wasn't. In 1995, the gay community wasn't really setting trends the way they are now.
Yeah.
But this was popular amongst that community. And then eventually, when the cult status started to hit and they started doing this thing at like midnight showings, like Rocky Horror style and things like that. And I feel like I had more fun researching this movie than I did watching this movie. There are some insane shit about this movie.
Yeah.
That, like, I can't believe how many articles have been written, books have been written, documentaries have been shot about the making of this movie, and, like, is it a good movie? Is it a bad movie? We don't know. Is Paul Verhoeven a genius? Is this just a bad movie that is getting a little bit more credit than it deserves? I don't know. At one point while I was watching it, I was like, when Kyle MacLachlan is waterboarding Nomi in the pool, aka the sex scene in the pool, and she's just writhing violently and underneath a waterfall / dolphin spitting fountain, and I was like, I think The Room has better sex scenes.
No,
that is a thing I actually said out loud. God damn it, this movie is fun as hell. Like, as baffled as I was and how much I disliked a lot of it, I was like, this movie is entertaining. And I listened to all of the original cast recordings of Showgirls the Musical today on YouTube. I listened to the original cast recordings of all. It's like 8 tracks and they're all like 2.5 minutes each. So it does not take long to get through. And I was laughing hysterically because obviously the musical is just a complete cut-up of the movie. They're making fun of it. They renamed Kyle MacLachlan's character Kyle MacLachlan in the musical. So, like, they're doing a send-up, but they're doing such a good job that, like, I was starting to get convinced by the musical that maybe the movie was good. Anyway, I really hated that one scene so much that I cannot give this any higher than a 4. But I am going to give it a 4 for entertainment value. I think they went a little bit too extreme in that scene. As Kyle would disdain from calling it the grape scene.
I do disdain from it, and I will take it up. And I,
yeah, go ahead, Kyle.
I will say... tepid this. I think that is a good scene. I think it's very well done in the overwhelming panic. I don't think it's a good thing that it happened, but its presentation is effective. Let me say that.
Yes, effective is the right word. Okay. I think it might have been...
It's one of...
It went on too long.
I mean, but again, I mean...
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Here's the thing, fellas. I've been on this trim for a little bit. Crazy to watch this one. God damn. Fucking the nudity is excessive. Am I right?
You get so used to it so fast.
Can I get an amen, fellas?
Amen.
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 The fact that, like, at some point, Kyle MacLachlan is there with no pants on, and you're like, oh my God, nudity. Wait, that's been happening the whole time.
I've seen all this. I'm used to this.
Man ass took me. I was like, oh God.
You do get used to it. Now, give me a couple more minutes here as a out of shape, pudgy, middle-aged dude to judge these women from 35 plus years ago. As a butt man, the 90s were not a good era for butt. I'll just say that. Especially all these girls have that terrible thong style that went above the hip bones that did not do the buttocks anybody any favors. That said, that was a bit. it's weird, man. It's not a fun movie. I kind of disagree. At least I didn't have fun this time. Again, this was a wild one to watch post Me Too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was hitting me all kinds of differently. Just like, it was almost like so many times, literally I'm watching and it's like that Tim and Eric gif of his mind just like, oh my God, people have been saying this for decades and nobody gave a shit. It's insane, man. He made a fucking $45 million movie about it. And they let him. He literally was rubbing their fucking faces in it. It's insane. It's, I'm going straight down the middle, 3. I think I would like to watch the R cut, maybe. Yeah. I would be interested in seeing that.
I'm curious about it.
So, but I'm going 3. I'm kicking it to Rye.
I'm not interested in the R cut. I also think this is like a one and done kind of movie. Like, I get it. I'm good. I was perfectly satiated from what I got. I get it. Don't need to watch this again. I agree with kind of everything you both were saying. I do think there are moments of this movie that are fun. And then there are moments of this movie that are very not fun. And intentionally kind of grimy and nasty. Which is like the weird tonal issue that we've been speaking and dancing around this whole podcast is I don't think they really were able to wrangle in the really conflicting wants of this movie. But when it comes to like how entertained I was, I think I'm 100% with Brian. I think I'm going to be maybe not as high or as enthusiastic as a 4. I think I might be with 3. But I had so much fun learning about this movie.
Yeah.
And that is part of the journey and experience. Is that like directly from the movie? No, but there was something in this movie, some nugget that stuck with me. And I was like, I got to know more about this. So there is something inherent to this movie that really sparked something in me. I don't know if it's good or bad or what exactly that is. But like, I had to also learn, like, why did they do some of the things they did here? And it was, as Brian also mentioned, there's a lot of reference material as to why they did the things. There are a lot of people talking about this movie. I also learned that, Penny, wrote and directed the sequel herself without Paul Verhoeven, which is fascinating. And I hear it's even worse. And Showgirls I kind of want to watch Penny's that Penny's from point. Heaven.
And that's Penny's with an apostrophe. So Penny is from Heaven.
Wow. That was actually really good.
It's pretty good.
She also ends up knocked up at the end of this one, so curious to see.
Oh, what yeah, does that would oh, be, it right. could be interesting. Could be interesting. Apparently it's not, but I still, there's something here enough that I would be interested in checking it out. But I think this is a solid 3 for me. Just a solid 3.
I sure hope we find out more about Penny's mom's grocery store. In the sequel.
She was there and like just topless within like 2 minutes. Like, all right, well.
Here's Penny and there's Penny.
Well, everything moves very quick in this movie.
Yeah.
Very quick.
We've been talking a lot about Paul Verhoeven. And for our final category, we're going to break him down and his vision and execution of Showgirls. So this is the director. I'm going to go ahead and start, and I'll just be very brief, and I will say I'm going to give this a 4. I'm going to put my flag down real quick and say I kind of, as Kyle said, grape is never good. We don't like grape. It's an awful thing. I do think the extent they showed it was necessary, and it was unflinching, and it made you sit in it and made you uncomfortable. And I think that is the least you can do if you had like the unflinching amount of nudity and excess all around it. It is the little bit of medicine that I think you should have to take in this movie. It is very uncomfortable. It made my skin crawl watching it, but I do think it really is maybe the fulcrum of this movie. And it is like the point of just like, if you had any misconceptions, because apparently in 1995, a lot of people did not understand or get this movie, it is that nobody's safe in this business. Even the most pure-hearted person is going to get really brutally abused and just used for somebody higher up's pleasure. That's how Hollywood runs.
And
that's
maybe
how
even by somebody they admire.
That's always how it goes. And I do think there is something really there. And why I say I'm going to give this a 4, maybe not a 5, because I am familiar with Paul Verhoeven. This is not his best movie. This is far from his best movie. But I do think he does deserve credit for being so unflinching, for putting his foot down and saying, hey, I'm going to do this movie my way, for making the studios give him $40 million to make an NC-17 movie, King. Not cutting it,
King,
getting it out. That's fucking impressive. That's
that is
super
impressive.
And as Brian said, I think earlier in the episode, like, how was somebody able to talk a studio into doing this? It takes some kind of fucking great director. So for that, he gets like a little bit of a bump, and he's going to be up at the 4 for me on this one. Boom. There goes my dynamite. Now I want to hear what Brian's dynamite sounds like.
You want to hear my dynamite? One of the reviews I read said they sure did show girls. And that was my favorite review of this movie.
Yeah.
I'm clearly still at odds with this. It's still sitting weird with me. Verhoeven showed up to the Razzies to accept his worst director award
in person.
The first time a director showed up to accept their award in person.
King, I say. Again.
And it feels like he knew. Like, he was like, yeah, I'm going to get this award. I'm going to be ready for it. I don't know. Like, I'm having a really hard time figuring out if this is one of the silliest slapdash, like, aha, we're making a movie, blah, 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 kind of things going on, or if this is like, there's so much intention here that I missed initially, but like, God, I'm like right down the middle of this one, I think, because I'm flip-flopping. This is either very good or very bad. And without being able to tell which it is, I have to land in the middle.
That's apt.
So yeah, 3. Just a very waffly 3 from me.
And, very waffly 3.
Kyle, finish it off.
Yeah. I've said it too. Like, this is an exploitation movie. Goddamn. It excels at being an exploitation movie. But with all credit due, and he wants to claim it, and it's crazy, it is deliberate, because I love Paul Verhoeven. I love all of his fucking work. He can direct people. Something happened. If he purposely told them to act like this and directed them to, it's the wrong choice, man. I disagree with it. It's crazy. I don't like it, and I can't give you a 5, but I can give you a 4, because I think you do fucking nail so many goddamn parts of it. And again, you made the fuckers pay you to make a movie calling them rapists to their face. It's the kingest fucking move of all time.
It really is.
It's insane, man. Fucking A, Paul Verhoeven. You fucking sad psycho fucking bastard. I love you.
He
nailed it.
He wanted to make a sequel, but obviously after this, the studio was like, we're not going to let you do another one. And it was going to be called Nomi Does Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Maxine, triple X energy here. And a little bit of A Star Is Born, but again with much more of the ramped up R-ratedness. But yeah, I think the themes are kind of obviously evergreen. That somebody was saying in 95, Hollywood's a bunch of rapists.
I liked it.
In 2025, we're like, yup, Hollywood's a bunch of rapists.
Who could, how, who? Why didn't anybody tell us this?
30 years later, we still haven't received the message.
So there we go.
Well, that was an interesting journey. I would love to hear how those numbers stacked up and what the average ended up being for Showgirls.
Okay. Between all of us, we gave it a 47, but because we're absent a voter, that's obviously going to have to be adjusted. So with the curve, we ended up giving it like a 62.5.
I think that's perfect.
No, I'm okay with
63?
That. 63? Okay
yeah,
that.
So like that's honest, right around where the Letterboxd score is, which was the highest.
Yeah.
So I think it's... And Letterboxd has the recency bias because it's only been around for so long that I think it's a more accurate portrayal of how a movie is being viewed modern now. Times.
Current trends. Yeah.
I would like to go and can you, okay, I'm unfamiliar with Letterboxd. Can you go on and click on someone's name and watch and look at all of the other stuff that they've written about? Because I'm really curious to go through the viewing history of the people who have gone on Letterboxd and are writing about this movie. What are you watching in your spare
Ryan's
time?
Ryan's about
that
to be one of them.
Here?
And then you're going to see Oh Lucy and
yeah, but he's on a podcast. You know, what are y'all doing that aren't being forced to watch this? Who's in your basement?
Who's in your basement?
I think that's a good game. Read a Letterboxd review and then have everybody else guess what was the last thing they reviewed. So after the tone of like their review for Showgirls, what was the last thing they reviewed?
Something we could do on Patreon.
That sounds great.
Well, if you want Patreon, there are many ways to find us. Sean, how can these lovely listeners find us?
On the link tree.
That's it. The link tree. That's There's it. It's link. Like the giving tree.
In the show
except
notes.
Except you have to do the work. And you're not going to form an attachment. And it's still just as sad, though. It's pretty sad. Link tree.
But it's worth it to get that sweet, sweet Discord link.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So anyways, you can
Facebook
find that.
Facebook and Twitter? Why?
that's true. But if you go to linktree.com/experiencegrind, I'm going to make it easy for you. That's an easy way to do that. And, you know, find the Patreon where for as little as a dollar each month, you can come in here an episode every week, basically. Sometimes not, but mostly every single week. Where this week, you'll probably hear us going through some people's Letterboxd and hopefully making them regret having an account.
Oh, that's
call
great.
Some people out.
Yeah,
and then Sean, maybe. Do you think you're going to see this movie?
Yeah, no. There's nothing that you guys said that would. When Brian said I had more fun researching this movie than watching this movie, I was like, man, all right, that seals it. Robert Dobby really had me curious.
A lot of fun to research.
I will say, I'm glad I watched it this time, but I'm in no hurry to watch it again. That's how I'll end it.
I probably will eventually, but not for a long time.
Yeah.
You're adding this to your future watch list?
I think there's enough fun stuff going on. I might try to catch this at a midnight showing if I'm ever around one.
That'd be cool.
I think that'd be fun to see.
Would you go in there like wearing a hoodie so people couldn't recognize you?
A trench coat, yeah.
A trench coat and like a surgical mask, like it's 2020 all over again.
Yeah. Woo! Crank down for what?
All right,
listen,
fellas,
we talked about Pee-wee as himself recently. I think that's a bad idea.
You guys didn't intend to, but then you started and you have now dubbed this month Nudevember, which I am a sucker for a theme month. However, I didn't have that planned. So I do have a Nudevember Lion choice. King. But I also had my original, more family-friendly choice. So, how you guys feeling? You want to get family or you want to get nudie?
What?
Well, family sometimes friendly. You have to get nudie to get family. Yeah,
they do, but not in this way.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Sex ed, Brian. Nice.
Yeah. Hey. I learned a thing or two.
When you say family-friendly, this is a blast from Kyle's past. Yeah.
Yes.
And this is a family-friendly movie you grew up on?
Uh-huh.
And then the other one, the Nudevember
choice, it Man's Best Friend?
Is a blast from Kyle's.
Did this come out on the Disney Channel?
I mean, I can just tell you my two choices, and then you guys can decide.
It
wasn't on the Disney Channel. I mean, it's pretty simple. My family-friendly one, and I've been wanting to do it for a while, is the Bean movie, Mr. Bean.
Oh.
And then if we want to go Nudevember and kick that one down the can, my Nudevember choice is the movie Species.
Oh.
Interesting. Okay.
I've never seen Species.
I've seen neither.
I've seen Species 1 and 2. Maybe parts of three.
I have a feeling my dad had Species and Showgirls on his VHS.
Hey, no judging. If I was, I probably still wouldn't have them in the VHS, honestly.
So I'm fine. You guys want to, I don't know if, here's the thing. I don't know if Species is streaming. Let's find that out first real quick.
That's a good, yeah.
How about that?
Oh, because of that era? That
it was sort of like lower tier A, B movie.
There's that weird space in between that's hard to find.
It's on Prime. In it, so at least B.
No, the space in between a B and an A that sometimes gets lost because like it doesn't have the rewatchability of a B movie, but it's not as popular as an A movie. We're like Cocoon. Try to find Cocoon. Stream Cocoon somewhere, I dare you.
Yeah.
What about the second Cocoon? Another Cocoon.
But
I've never seen the second Cocoon. I've seen the first one so many times.
Oh, that's streaming on so many things.
You like that one? Yeah, Species. Let's do it. Let's stick with Nudevember.
Let's do Species.
Here's the thing. Species, good chance it might be a man's best friend. I don't know.
The second one, so how bad could it be?
I was a teenage boy, and it was sci-fi with boobies.
I can channel that energy.
Here's the thing, though. Like, it's got... Look at this. Species has Forrest Whitaker.
Yep.
Fucking Michael Ben Madsen. Kingsley. Michael Madsen.
Ben Kingsley is in the first one?
Sir is he Ben Kingsley.
The doctor dad?
Species 1. Of course he is.
That's Alfred a Malina, way better cast than... Elizabeth Berkley and Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. Let's roll with Species. Let's do Species, this sounds great. Boys.
Species.
It's going to be, 1995, 1 hour, 44 minutes, rated R because it's Nudevember.
This was also 95.
That's it, boys. It's locked in. Species. Here we go. Actually, cool. Looking at it on Prime, it's got 4.5 stars. Can't trust Prime.
Prime, you two, is some bullshit. When it comes
are you two
to
going in blind?
Hmm?
Absolutely.
Are you two going in blind?
Who?
I've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen Species tons.
Talking to you, Kyle. I meant the other two.
Sorry.
I know Ryan.
Have you seen
talking
it, Sean?
To you? God.
No. Have you seen Species? Okay.
Outside of on top of the aforementioned VHS shelf.
Okay. You've seen it on the shelf.
I saw
the
case.
Seen it
yeah.
In the VCR. All right.
I saw the
I'm
box.
Excited, boys. It's one I remember liking as a kid outside of Beyond the Nudity. I was like, this is a good movie. And there's boobs.
And
I look forward to seeing if the second, the listen, first.
We could send this whole month home with Titanic.
Yo.
Near I just sat through 3.5 far. Long boobless hours with one 2-minute
to show for it.
When is the last time that we didn't like have a sign off? This is like the first time Kyle's like, bye, we're going to Patreon. And I liked it.